This is Audible.
They Saw Our Day, researched and presented by Lance Richardson. Copyright 2000. American Family Publications, Idaho Falls, Idaho. All rights reserved.
Lance Richardson was president of American Family Institute until his death in March 2004, an organization dedicated to rebuilding America through strengthening the family. He has spoken around America on family topics, emergency preparedness, and on solutions for our current societal problems, as well as his program herein, They Saw Our Day, detailing many of the legends and prophecies of cultures throughout the world who have prophetic glimpses of our day. Lance has also been a radio talk show host for both regional and national shows for several years. Lance authored the books The Message, Knotted Gold, and co-authored Masquerading as Angels, Zion Seeking the City of Enoch, and Zion, The Long Road to Sanctification. Lance has studied cultures from around the world with their prophecies and legends for several years, in particular the Hopi Indians. He has traveled to meet and interview several of these groups. He has found some powerful solutions for our time in their stories. Lance is the father of six boys and one girl, and is married to the former Josette Miller.
Lance did a lot of research, and he came across some information on the Hopi Indians. And so went down to the Hopi Reservation, and Lance will tell you all about that. But one has led to another, to another, to another, and now we have several tribes and actually several continents that have been involved with the same kind of predictions. And that's all about these days. And so we call it They Saw Our Day, and that's what it'll be about here today. And Lance has just finished a stay in the hospital, as many of you do know, where there was very little hope that he would come out alive. And it's been really, if you wonder if there are miracles that take place in this day and age, I can tell you, due to faith and prayers, Lance is alive today, and his recovery has been almost remarkable. Many doctors tell me, they shake their heads and say, I can't believe this. I saw him. I did not think he would come out of that hospital alive. So to have him here now says to me that faith and prayers are still being heard, and it's very important. So Lance, we'd like to welcome you.
Well, thank you very much. It's really a pleasure and a privilege to be here this evening and be able to talk about something that's become very important to me, near and dear to my heart, as I have studied more and more about some of the prophetic views of our day and time and of the future. And it's been most fascinating. I think tonight you'll find, as I have in my research, that this is probably the most incredible story I have ever heard. It is absolutely fascinating. In fact, I was just down a week and a half ago down in Los Angeles doing an interview. I was telling them this story, and the talk show host stopped me about 10 minutes into it. He says, wait a minute. He says, I've just got to ask you. He says, is this really true? I said, it sure is. And he says, this is the most incredible thing I've ever heard. He says, the world's got to hear about this. I said, well, we're trying. So I hope tonight you'll feel the same as we do about the wonderful experiences that cultures all over the earth have had in this experience. I'd like to share with you, a lot of people have asked me, so why, you know, what gave you such an interest in this? And I guess that's kind of a twofold answer. Let me tell you first, I purchased a motorbike for a few of my sons. And on Christmas afternoon, we went out to the garage to just start. We weren't going to ride it. We were just going to try to start it. And we couldn't get things started. My neighbor came over and adjusted the carburetor and a few things and said, why don't you just drive down your driveway and see if it's running? All right. Okay. So I drove it down the driveway, into the road, started to turn around, and hit a patch of ice. It went one way. I stuck my leg out to try to catch me, and it just split me in two. Fractured my hip, ruptured a disc in my back. Well, they hauled me up to the hospital, and that night they did surgery on my hip. And 2 days later, my lungs began to fill up with blood clots, and my left lung filled completely full of blood clots and quit working, and they had just the highest amount of oxygen they could pump into me going in, and I was still suffocating. To make a long story short, my other lung filled up with blood clots, developed two large abscesses and burst, and I was suddenly in a very life-threatening situation. I was in a coma for about 6 to 7 weeks. My pancreas quit working. My body filled up with a real rare form of staph infection that spread from head to toe. And I developed a disease called ARDS, adult respiratory distress syndrome, which most people that get it are dead. And so I was in a very, very precarious situation. And as the doctors, most of them said, you were a dead man. And I want you to know tonight, though this is a different part of the story, I was a dead man. And during part of that time of my coma, I literally passed out of my body into the spirit world. And the reason I bring that up tonight is I want to tell you that there is indeed a world after this. There is life after death. There is a God. And the world over there, it has the most incredible peace you could ever possibly imagine. It was so powerful. You felt the love of God and that peace through everything and in everything. And it was a feeling that you would never want to leave. There were only two things in this world that made me want to come back. Nothing else mattered. One was my family. And the second was that I suddenly had a clear understanding of who I was and that I was not finished with why I'd been sent to this earth. Nothing else mattered. I wasn't thinking about, well, I wonder what the stock market's doing today. And I'm a big football fan. I wasn't wondering what the Super Bowl score was. And it was on while I was there. But what I was worried about was my children, my wife, my family. I remember literally going to my kids' classrooms and visiting them, going to see if they were okay. It went on week after week after week, and I started worrying, how are they doing through all this? I started wondering if I was going to make it back. But my family was so important. And as I watched what was taking place, I realized the people of our country especially, and our world in general, they don't get it. We don't realize really what's important. We are really turning away, to a large degree, away from that which is really important in our lives. Well, when I came back, you know what I told my wife? I told her, I said, I would do anything to get that peace back again. Well, I'm here to tell you tonight that that peace is possible. And one of the things that has fascinated me, and one of the things I was literally told when I visited this other side, was the day would come when that society of peace would be built on this land, in this world. And that's the feeling that would be there. And I would do anything to have that feeling again. Well, I had a desire to study many of these things before this took place, but it has greatly increased since that time. But I have found out in my studies that it is not just the Hopi Indians that have that story. It is almost every single culture around this world. In the last 6 months, and as well as the last 3.5 years, as I did interviews with a number of other cultures, I've had a chance to interview and communicate with people through a multitude of Indian tribes, the Hopis, the Chippewa, the Cherokee, the Nez Perce, the Pueblo, the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Incas, the Chippewa, all the Iroquois tribes. Then we had a chance to interview a Tibetan Lama, who was the translator for the Dalai Lama for some period of time. What a fascinating experience to hear their story and their views. The Hindus, the Muslims, the Japanese, the Jewish people. It's been absolutely fascinating to hear the correlation between all of it. And what have I come away with? I've come to a very definite belief and understanding. We're all from the same family. We all have a great opportunity that God, the great creator, has spoken to his children all over the world. And the story is the same. Well, I want to share with you some of those stories. And I think you'll find the similarity and the correlation fascinating. But I want to preface my remarks by saying, really, even though a lot of what we'll talk about tonight, there is a lot of destruction and prophecies of destruction, but this is really a message of hope. And there was very few individuals or tribes I spoke with that didn't have that feeling. It is a message of hope, because if there was one thread or two or three threads that came through every single culture, one was the fact that there is a day of utter peace coming. Now, there were a little bit different prophecies and different versions of what they had been told, which was made it more fascinating to add the different stories together. But a time of peace is coming after that time of destruction and purification, as most Indian tribes call it. And so I hope that tonight you'll take away from this a message of hope rather than of destruction. I had the opportunity about 3.5 years ago to start working with a book project. We started writing Zion, Seeking the City of Enoch. Now, people have asked me, why that book? This is actually a historical novel. I mean, how many of you ever asked yourself the question, what would a society of peace be like? I think we all have. Sometimes, is it possible? And if so, what would the characteristics of such a society be? Well, that was our question. We started studying in ancient history, and there is a powerful story that exists about a city that did reach a utopian-type society called the City of Enoch. Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi Scrolls, as well as the pseudepigrapha collection and apocryphal collections, had a lot of information about the society. It is really coming more and more to a forefront because of these new discoveries, these documents. But the story was so powerful, and the thing that was amazing to us was we found that here existed a society that mirrored America. They were just full of the exact same problems that we have. And yet out of the chaos and out of the rubble that became this society called Shum, they had self-destructed, and God told them they would. But out of that came forth, in my opinion, the most successful society of all history. Now, it's interesting because our goal was to start studying, all right, so what are the characteristics? Why did they make it? There have been hundreds of attempts throughout history to develop such. You look at the different attempts, even communism, and it was interesting as we started studying the different attempts, we found communism had a lot of similarities to what did work, but the major difference was with communism, they were forcing the people to be a part of something. They had to do what the government said. With the system that they had in Enoch's time and in a number of other cultures that we have studied, the entire mode of it was one of liberty for the individual. They had complete choice and complete freedom to be a part of the society or not. And that made the whole difference. It made a major, major difference between the two different types. Well, it has been a fascinating discovery, a great opportunity for us to piece the different pieces together. And this is why we had to put it into a novel form was the pieces were so far apart in all these different books, we kind of had to pull it together, and we used a lot of truth, a lot of factual characters, but we had to weave some of the others in to pull the stories together to give people an idea of what took place and what were the solutions. And we'll talk about a few of those solutions here at the end because I think that's important. But let me talk now. As we were doing that study, we began to study some of the other cultures around the world that we started hearing, hey, do you know the Hopi Indians have some information about an ancient Zion-type society, a utopian society? No, I didn't know that. So we started making some contacts, and before long, we ended up down on the Indian reservation in Hopi land in Arizona. And that was a great experience. We really fell in love with the people there. Wonderful, wonderful people. They were scared of us to begin with, and rightfully so. They tell us that they've had a lot of people who have come in and destroyed a lot of their sacred artifacts, taken artifacts, and destroyed that which is sacred to them. And so to begin with, they wondered whether we were there, you know, for good or bad purposes. And they told us, well, we'll give you about 10 minutes, 7 to 10 minutes. About 2 hours later, we were saying, well, we really ought to go. And they're going, oh, no. What else you want to ask? And so once they found out that we really were there to tell their true story, they were very open with us, and it was a wonderful experience. We met with several different sets of Hopi elders as well as just some of the Hopi people themselves and asked a lot of questions. And through that, let me tell you their story. Now, also, I've had a chance to interview a number of other individuals who have written books about the Hopis, etc. And so I had a chance to ask the Hopi elders while we were there, all right, now, is this correct? Is this correct? Because we really wanted to have the accurate story. Long ago, the Hopi people, they tell the story that their people were not native to this land. They actually came across the oceans in ships and came to this land, and that they then settled on this continent, and they were a very fearsome people. The time came when they, as they said, we were converted unto the Great White Spirit. And this occurred before what they called the Great Star appeared in the sky. Well, they were so converted that they took their weapons of war and they dug a hole and buried them in the earth and took an oath that they would never take them up again. When this took place, their enemies came upon them and began to slay them. They said they fell down on the ground, laid prostrate, began to pray to the Creator that He would save them. And many of those who were killing them dropped their weapons and joined them and took the oath also. Well, they tell after that time they went on a migration northward out through a wilderness to a new place where they made their new home, and they became tillers of the earth and crop growers. And they raised food for the armies that surrounded them who protected them, because they had taken this oath to not take up weapons of war. To this day, they have tried to continue that promise. When their sons reach the age of 12, they give them a bow and arrow, and the arrows are blunt to remind them of that promise. They are not to take up weapons of war again. And so this is a very important promise. By the way, I did find a couple other tribes that also had this same story. The Pueblos, who I had known from meeting with the Hopis, had this same story. They are cousins, as well as the Nez Perce. But anyway, after this period of time, they continued to migrate northward till they came to where they live today. Long time ago, the Creator called his children together, and he explained to them what he called the true life plan, and explained to them how they should live in order to live in peace and harmony. Told them that he would split them up into four colors of people, and they would go throughout all the world. But the time would come when many of them would turn against the true life plan and would begin to become at war with one another and to not associate one with another. And so he gave them some important signs for them to be able to recognize their true brothers. He taught them a very specific handshake by which they would know their true brothers, as well as the fact that he taught them the sign of peace, which all people seem to know, the Indian sign of peace. Now, interestingly enough, they said, "We didn't ever say how." So that was the white man. They brought that in. We didn't ever say how. But that was the representation of their symbol for peace. Well, he told them that after they were scattered, the time would come when they would start coming back together again. And they would be able to recognize whether their brothers were keeping the true life plan by this handshake. They told me that when the Spaniards came upon the land, they went out to greet them, and they took cornmeal and made a line in the sand and reached across the line to give them the handshake. And they said instead he handed us a trinket. They said, "We knew there was a time of great bloodshed ahead," which, of course, is exactly what happened. They had been told long before that there was a good chance the white people that would come would not be keeping the true life plan, and therefore war and other great catastrophes would take place. Well, about 2,000 years ago, I have had several different dates. They do not have a recorded date of this. They say several said 2,000 years ago. Others said as recently as 1,400 years ago. But in that time period, the day came when they were living in where they are in Arizona at this time, in a place called Old Oribe. And that is the oldest continually inhabited settlement in North America. They said at that time, a man came out of heaven and appeared to them who was wearing a long white flowing robe, had a beard that was forked, had bluish green eyes, and he spoke of peace and taught them the original teachings or the true life plan again. At that time, he also greatly increased their productivity as far as their lifestyle, helped them to understand. He gave them corn, for one thing, that is the life stay of those people. And he taught them what they should do to live in peace and harmony with one another. Well, he stayed with them for a short period of time. And during that time period, he gave to them a set of stone tablets, which they have to this day. Now, I have not had a chance to see them personally, but I have interviewed three individuals who have. Now, they claim that there's only five or six white men who have ever been given the privilege to see their stone tablets. And so I was happy to just be able to interview a couple of them who had. But most fascinating experiences, they called this individual the Mossau. Now, there was one village in Hopi land that called him Mossiwa. And I found it very interesting that both of them were very close to the name Messiah. Their story fits so closely with the story of Jesus Christ, and many of them believe, yes, it was Jesus Christ. Many of them do not believe that. But I guess I happen to be one that does believe that from their story. He told them that he was the first and the last. And he told them that when he was ready to leave, they pleaded with him to stay. And he said, "I must go unto my father, but I will come again." Well, there's so many similarities, you just have to start saying, "Whoa, wait a minute. Was this indeed the same Jesus Christ?" Well, in any case, he left with them these stone tablets. And he told them that he was going to give stone tablets also to the other color peoples of the world, the black, the yellow, and the white. And they shared their story with me, and they said that we have met and seen the plates that the Tibetans have, and they claim that the Tibetans are their cousins. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that as I talk about the Tibetan Lama and my interview with him in a moment. The Kikuyu tribe in Africa also, they said, to have a set of these stone tablets, and we have done interviews with a few people with the Kikuyu tribe. And then they claim that there is another set of stone tablets with the Swiss people, in a, with a group of people that live high in the Swiss mountains. And they have never seen those, but they have been told that they have them. Now, to them, it was significant that each of the four groups lived high in the mountains, and that that was part of what precipitated who received the plates, I guess, or the records. But these stone tablets contained the original teachings of the way they should live in peace, as well as prophecies of what would come from the time he left until the time he came again. Now, this was, to them, a wonderful statement in itself that he would come again. And he promised them that when he came again, he would live with them and help them build a society of utter peace here on this land. And they're anxiously awaiting that day to take place. Now, the prophecies that he gave to them and told them would take place before the time he came again are very, very interesting. And most of them have been fulfilled. Almost every single one of them have been fulfilled at this point now. And let me just share a bunch of these that he did give to them. He told them the time would come when the white man would come upon the land and would force them onto small parcels of land and lord over them. Indeed, that took place. And they lost many of their rights. He said that they would take away many of their customs and try to seek to take their traditions away from them, which certainly has happened. He told them that the white men would also bring a lot of good things with them, in which they would bring technology, which one thing would be that they would teach them how to bring running water right into their huts. Now, that was quite a miracle for the Hopis, because they live on three 600-foot high mesas. And the only water source in that whole area is a stream that runs down along the valley floor down below. And so they would traverse back and forth all the way down and go get their buckets of water and take it back up. So to have running water, they thought that was quite a great thing. But he warned them. He said, never become too reliant upon it, for the day will come when that water will become filthy and will make you greatly sick or die if you drink it. Second of all, he told them that they would develop a system of power by which the people could just touch the side of their hut and it would light up. And they thought, wow, that's great. But he also warned them about this. He told them the world would be shaken three times before it came, the first two with one hand, the third time with both hands. But he told them that in that third shaking, that power would be taken away. And so if they became totally reliant upon it, they would suffer. Well, because of that, there is about 20% or a little bit more than that of the Hopis who to this day refuse to have running water or electricity, fearing the technology rather than preparing for the other end of it. Most of the other Hopis have decided, now we can use the technology, but let's be prepared for the opposite as well. Well, that was quite an interesting set of prophecies to them, they thought. And as the Mossow continued with his prophecies to them, he told them, as I mentioned, that there would be three great shakings of the earth that would take place. The first two would be less powerful, as if with one hand, but the third would be with two hands. And he explained to them that they could avoid that third shaking if the people would turn back to God and would keep the commandments he had given them. Well, the first shaking, he gave them some prophecies to watch for that would take place around that time period, and they would know that the first shaking was about to take place. The first thing that he told them to watch for was that they would see carriages that were pulled by animals, and then the carriages suddenly would no longer be pulled by animals. They'd go all by themselves. And then they were to look for, as they called it, spinning wheels with voices coming out from behind them. Well, to them, that was the covered wagons. The spinning wheels rolling over the land and voices coming out of the wagon. He told them that these carriages would soon be connected together and they would go down a line of metal and smoke would be coming out the top. Certainly fit the railroad system that came in. And then he told them that the carriages would lift off the ground and begin to fly all on their own and leave a trail of dust in the sky. Well, the airplane, the Model T, all these things came around the time of the First World War. And so they believed that the First World War was that first great shaking. Another one that he told them would take place would be they would see a black ribbon that would start to cross all across the continent from one end to the other, back and forth. And these little bugs would go back and forth on this black ribbon. VW, I guess, is the bug, right? clearly the black ribbon stretching across would be a road system. Another one that I thought was fascinating, the way he actually described it, was a cobweb that would cover the earth, and people would speak into it, and they'd be heard clear on the other side of the world. And you think about how you would maybe describe our telephone system, or internet system for that matter, to someone that many years ago. I can't think of a better explanation of what it'd be. So clearly the cobweb came as well. They would also see at that time the signs of the second shaking to take place. They would see a people rise up in power that were governed by a sign or led by a sign that he drew on a rock. And I've seen the pictures of the rock, and the sign is clearly the swastika. Now, to them, that was quite significant because their symbol for peace is an inversion of the swastika sign. And so I thought it was pretty significant that you'd invert peace to bring war. Well, clearly Germany had that sign, and he told them that they would join with the people of the rising sun, and they would bring about this second great shaking of the world. Now, the second great shaking was to end with a gourd of ashes being dropped from one of these carriages in the sky. And where it landed, it would destroy everything where it landed, and nothing would grow for some time or be alive in that area for some time. Very great description of what took place with Hiroshima and our bomb. One bad note to that, though, was he told them that the white nation that dropped that gourd of ashes in that second shaking would have a gourd of ashes dropped upon them in the third shaking, if the third shaking were to take place. Now, he gave to them a number of other signs to watch for. One of them was a sign that they were told when they saw this sign, they would know it was time to go out and let the people know about all these prophecies. They were told to keep them to themselves until this period of time. Interesting, the Incas also had this same story. They said that they were told that they were not to go to the world and share their prophecies or their vision of this golden age of peace, as they called it, until they saw a particular sign. The Incas, their sign was there would be an earthquake that would take place and the land would open up and down below there would be a temple of gold. In 1949, the very thing took place. High in the mountains in Cusco, Peru, 14,000 feet up, there was an earthquake. It split the mountain open. And underneath the monastery in Cusco, there was a temple that had much gold in its working, as well as silver. Now, this happened to be one of the temples or one of the deposits that Francisco Pizarro was looking for when he came to the Americas. He went to the Incas and had heard about this temple of gold and was seeking to find it, as well as many of their treasures of gold. The Inca people, they wonder how in the world Francisco Pizarro ever conquered an entire nation of Incas who were very civilized and they had great technology at that time for their day and time. Here was a great nation that were actually destroyed by 180 men. Francisco Pizarro came in with 180 men and destroyed the capital, and it turned out that the reason was because as he came in, a white bearded man, it was Wiracocha, who they thought he was, and he came in to their city, and they believed that he was the great white god who had promised him that he would come again, and so they opened up to him. Well, when their king found out it was not indeed their great white god returning, it was too late. They imprisoned him, and he refused to tell them where their caches of gold and other treasures were, and so they ransacked the entire civilization, destroying their buildings, destroying the people, burning everything in sight nearly, and a lot of sacred records as well as many edifices they had constructed were destroyed through that raid. Interestingly enough, they had saved these large caches of gold and silver, they told later. The reason they had saved these and buried them was that the great white god had told them when he returned, he would join with them in building a society of peace. And in it would be a great temple, and that they were saving the silver and gold to help build that city and to build that temple. Montezuma also told that same story. Here was Montezuma of the Aztecs, who had formerly been known as the Toltecs, and the Toltecs had had some mighty cities in Central America, and the Aztecs were led at that time by Montezuma. When Cortez came in, once again, they thought he was the great white god, Quetzalcoatl. Interestingly enough, there are all these different names for this great white god. Most of them translated mean feathered serpent. For example, in the Quetzalcoatl, Quetzal was a type of bird. The feathers could only be worn by the kings and by royalty. It was basically to them the lord of the heavens. And the Coatl was the snake. And to them, the snake had great power and was lord of the underworld or the earth. And so to them, the name Quetzalcoatl meant lord of heaven and earth. And Kukulkan, who is the Mayan name for this being that came to them, also means the same. Gukumats, which is another name. We found just a lot of different names that this individual was called by. But the stories seem to correlate with every different culture about this great white God coming and visiting them, teaching them. In some cases, and this was fascinating, was we found that the Mayans and the Aztecs told us that when he came, he not only taught them about a way of life, but he taught them the arts, he taught them sciences, he taught them astronomy, he taught them how to grow cottons of many different colors. One of the things that we've been studying lately was the original records of the Spanish conquistadores, as well as the monks and fathers that came over. Interestingly enough, they tell the stories of coming into cities where there were cottons growing with many different colors, not just white. Of course, some of these cities were magnificent in their structure. They destroyed them because they wanted to wipe out the memory of this Quetzalcoatl or Kukulkan, because at the time they thought he was pagan. It was a pagan worshiping. I mean, here was a feathered serpent they were worshiping. They didn't understand. They actually were worshiping a great white god. And afterwards, I read a couple of the Spanish fathers' quotes from their journals saying, boy, I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I hadn't destroyed all these records. One particular individual had burned an entire, a huge library of codices, volumes and volumes that would have told us about these people, but they were all obliterated. Anyway, the story was fascinating as all of them told the story that the time would come when this great white God would come back, and every single one of them tell the story that they would build a society of complete peace at that time when he came back. And they're anxiously awaiting that return. Now, going back to the Hopi story, as their story so correlates with so many of the other tribes, he told them that the time would come when they would see this sign, that they would see a house of glass that would come up, it would be built on the east coast of Turtle Island. Now, Turtle Island is the name that a number of the Indian tribes used to describe America. Now, here's the reason why. They had also had another prophecy that when the white men came on to land, they would look like turtles. That they would be human, but they would have shells like turtles. Now, you think about the armor that they wore, it certainly would resemble that of a turtle. And so it became known as Turtle Island to a number of these different Indian cultures, which was interesting. So he told them that they would see a house of mica or glass that would be built on the east coast of Turtle Island, in which all of the countries of the world would send representatives to this house, and they would talk of peace and seek to bring peace to the world. Well, he warned them that those who came to that building, that many of them would only talk of peace, and that their pretenses were for power and gain only, and to not trust many of those who were involved with it. But anyway, they were told that when they saw that house of glass, they were to go, they were sent a delegation back to that building and deliver a message to the world of what would take place if the people did not turn back to the great God. Well, in 1959, they saw a newspaper with a picture of the United Nations building in New York City. And they said, there it is, the house of glass, it's here. And so they sent back a delegation. It was actually a delegation of six men composed of several different Indian tribes. And they went back and they petitioned to go in and deliver the message and were refused three times. The third time, actually, they had a vote and gave the veto vote to the United States. The United States said no. And that man's name was Henry Cabot Lodge, and they have a hatred for him up to this day because of that fact. However, it's interesting to note, just the other day I found that there's one of the great Hopi elders, a man named Thomas Bayanca, and in 1992, he was allowed to go back to the UN and deliver their message. But when they were refused, they wrote it down and tried to pass it on in writing, but they don't know whether it actually was ever read. But they tried to warn the people that the time had come when that third great shaking would occur if the people did not change. Now, the Maasai gave the Hopis a number of different prophecies to watch for that would be signs leading up to this third great shaking. And these are very interesting. One of the signs was that they would see men who would start saying, I know more than the great creator. I want to be a woman. And they would change themselves to be a woman. There would be women who would say, I know more than the great creator. I want to be a man. They would change themselves to be a man. The Hopi elders told me, they said, we thought, how in the world could that ever happen? They said, then we saw Boy George, and we knew, okay, that's happened. It's taken place. So that sign was fulfilled. Another one that they were told was that women would start wearing men's clothing, and that women would start raising their skirts higher and higher until they began to expose the parts that were most sacred to their body. And clearly, our magazines are full of it across this country. They were told that the time would come when the world would seem as if time would be speeding up. And boy, what an accurate description of our day today. He told them that time would speed up so much that families would no longer spend time together, that grandparents would not take time for their grandchildren or their children, and parents would take no time for their children, and that the sanctity of the family would be destroyed. Now, this is a prophecy that I think every single tribe I've talked with and culture, including the Hindus, the Muslims, the Buddhists, every one of them had prophecies that the time when the destructions would occur would correlate with families being destroyed. Powerful message to us, I think, today. Another thing that they were told would be, and this was also a sign that they were about to start receiving some of their rights and freedoms back, and that was that they would see an eagle that would rise up off the ground, fly up into the skies, and land on the moon. And they said, we thought, how in the world are we going to know if an eagle lands on the moon? We can't see up there. They said, and then there we were sitting in 1969 with the rest of the world. We heard, Houston, the eagle has landed. And we thought, the eagle's there. And Hope Yeller said to me, he says, notice Sputnik could not make it. Apollo 1 could not make it. He says, had to be called Eagle before it could make it. I said, well, you're right. That's really amazing. He told them that there would be a great commotion within the nature, that there would be great tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, there would be tidal waves, there would be, the seasons would begin changing to the point where the Chippewa and the Okanagans also had a story that people wouldn't get to the point where they couldn't even plant their crops. This morning I was talking with a good friend of mine in Ashton, and they said, you know, we haven't been able to put our potatoes in yet. That certainly fits with what we've been studying. And clearly all the elements are in commotion. Interestingly, one of the Hopi elders said to me, he said, El Nino, heck. I said, what do you mean by that? And he says, oh, everybody blames everything on El Nino. He says, it's not El Nino. And I said, well, I think I agree with you, but what do you mean by your statement? He said, it's not El Nino that's causing the commotions of the world and of nature. He said, it is the sins of the people. He says, Mother Earth is shaking and quivering and quaking with the wickedness of the children on earth. He said she is seeking to rid herself of that wickedness. Wow, that's a powerful, powerful statement. And very clearly, these catastrophes are occurring. In connection with that, there was one tribe that had a very interesting prophecy about these carriages that would fly in the sky, and the time would come when the carriages would begin falling from the sky. It was the Asanabi tribe. It seems like more and more frequency that is taking place. But in any case, these prophecies began to be fulfilled, and some of the others that he told them of was that they would see the sea or the ocean would turn black, and the living things in it would begin to die around it. Now, they believe that that was certainly the oil spills, such as what took place in Alaska. They also said that morality would be gone from amongst the people. Corruption of the white man's government. This was something that they talked quite a bit about, the fact that the white man's government would become so corrupt that no one could trust them. And that certainly has taken place in many ways. They were told that there would be a black people who would come upon the land, and that they would have two uprisings, one for their rights and freedom, and second for power. Now, the second one, they don't believe has taken place yet, but they believe that will be part of the third shaking. They told them that there would be villages that would be built that would be so high you could not see outside of it. And when that third shaking took place, these villages would start to tumble down upon the people. And the people inside these large villages you could not see out would be destroyed. Told them that man would find the blueprint of life and that they would begin making their own animals. Now, can you imagine a statement like that that many years ago? And now we watch, genetic breeding as well as cloning. Schools would become an enemy of the people, that they would seek to change the teachings and traditions of the people. And that, I was telling some people the other day, in fact, I think I mentioned this on our radio show, that not too long ago I was trying to do a search on a UCD encyclopedia for some information about Lafayette and two or three of the other founding fathers. They weren't there. Nothing. No mention. And I thought, wow, it's just being wiped away, our history. And very, very sad. One other sign that would be of interest was the fact that there would be an alignment of the planets, and that when the planets aligned, it would be a sign that the third shaking was imminent. It would take place at any time at that point. The last other sign that they mentioned was that they would see a house that would be thrown up into the sky, and it would stay there. And men would go up and start living in it. And I said to him, ooh, Mir space station? I said, yeah, that's our interpretation. They said, also could be Skylab. One of their prophecies actually told that this house would then fall from the sky and look like a blue star falling from heaven. Now, they said that they have talked to observatories in Australia that said that from the angle of Australia, when Skylab fell in, I think it was 1979, that it looked like a blue star falling from the heavens. And so that would be also a fulfillment of that prophecy. There would be a great famine that would occur as part of this third shaking. And he told them, the Masao told them, that they should store food for a period of 3 seasons. I asked him, now, what's your interpretation of that, 3 seasons? They said, well, there's various interpretations. Some that say that's 3 years. Others that say, hey, we have more than one growing season, so it's 3 seasons. He said, in any case, we store food. And when they have a wedding, instead of giving them, as he said, we don't give them toasters and microwave ovens. So we give them food. And I said, well, you're a lot smarter than we are. And so they give them bags of corn and corn flour for storing for that time when the famine would come. Money means very little to most of the Hopis. They were told that they should not seek after riches, but should seek the quiet life, the meek life, and they have done so. And you look at where they live, and clearly that is the case for so many of them. In that third shaking, there would be riots that would erupt from coast to coast. And war would break out, and it would look like our land was about to be overthrown. And a gourd of ashes would be dropped, and this third shaking would be started by the red people, is a country led by a red sign. Now, I've seen the drawing of it, and I have to tell you, it certainly could be interpreted as the Chinese flag. In correlation with that, I'm going to share with you a couple other prophecies. I think I've found now 5 different cultures that have prophetic views that the time would come when the bear and the yellow people would come together and attack our country. And you think about the bear being the sign of Russia, and some of the revelations have come out recently about some of their work together, and it does possibly fit. Well, during this period of conflict on our land, they were told that it would look like we were about to be overthrown when a group from the West would rise up and come forward and save the country from destruction. And they were told that that group from the West would be their true white brothers, and they were to join with them, and Masao would return. And what they call the Bahani would come from heaven, and Bahani is interpreted the people of light. People of light would come down and join with them and help them in creating a society of peace on this land. Now, as we talked about that society of peace, it was really interesting to discuss that. They believe that time will come when it will completely cover this continent and that it will be an entire nation of freedom. And they said, we believe that we will be sent throughout the world to bring the true Hopis to our land to live with us and to join with us. Are you saying then you just believe it's just Hopis? I said, oh, no. What I mean is the truly peaceful ones of the earth, because Hopi means peaceful one. They said, we will go throughout the world and we will bring them to join with us in this society. Their vision of that day and time is so masterful and wonderful. It is so neat to look at the different prophecies of the different Indian tribes as they have told about what would take place in that day and time. It is just incredible as they talk about the technology that would come forward. One of the statements from one of the tribes is the fact that that day would be so glorious that the very blades of grass would erupt early from the soil to be able to see the day. What a great description of a time of peace. During that time, we would see new types of technology developed, new power that would be made from the magnetic field of the earth, is what they said. And there would become a new type of construction and building as well. And that this new type of building would make the architecture of this city much, much greater than what the world had ever seen. New flowers and trees of different kinds that no one had seen before, that were a variety of colors that we probably don't have in our world today. That's most of the Hopi's story and what they shared with me about their vision of the future. There's some sad days ahead, if they're right, and I believe they are. And there's also some great, great days. The Caro Indians, the Caros are a branch of the Incas, and probably the only Incas that are left, actually. And they said that this time of peace, they were told it would last for 1,000 years, an entire millennium. And so they're waiting for that day and time. The Tibetans, now, Here's an interesting story. Lobsang Rabke is the name of this Tibetan Lama that I had a chance to interview, and what a wonderful man. I was so impressed with him. He's right now doing a professorship at UCLA, and he's a doctor in psychology as well as a Tibetan monk and lama, a translator for the Dalai Lama for a period of time. I told him, I said, you know, the Hopis tell a very fascinating story about you guys, and they say that you are their cousins. I said, is that the same thing you believe? He said, yes, we do. He says, it goes back to a time in which about 2,000 years ago, we had a set of prophecies that were given to our people, and the time period would correlate with what the Hopis say their experience was. And one of the prophecies was that the time would come when part of their people would fly on iron birds east. He says, now you have to understand, east to us would be the United States and Europe. He says, and we generally interpret it America, because the rest of the prophecy was that they would fly east and come to join with their true red-faced brothers. And they would join in building this land of peace, or the society of peace. And I thought, well, that's great. That sounds like that fits very well with what the Hopis as well as other Indian tribes have told us. I said, what are some of the other prophecies? Now, they tell the story that a long time ago there was a man that came amongst them that many believed to be a god. He said, most of us don't believe that today. We believe that he was an enlightened one, as in their belief at this time is that there isn't necessarily a god as a creator, but that we do have spirits or souls that do live after this life, and that we continue to pass on and reincarnate into other individuals. Their belief of the Dalai Lama is the fact that he'd be a reincarnation of many enlightened ones. Does that mean that you believe that these spirits of these enlightened ones work through him or in him? He stopped for a minute. Good question. I guess both. But I thought that was interesting. They were told a long time ago in these prophecies that the time would come when there would be great upheaval throughout the cosmos, as he referred to it, and nature would begin to have great troubles. There would be disasters worldwide. We went through the very same stories of the earthquakes, the famine, the droughts, the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then he said that also, and this obviously was key to me, was the fact that he said we were told that families would be destroyed. The sanctity of the family would be destroyed, and people would no longer have time for their children. Now, he shared also that to them, one of the most important signs of the disintegration of society would be that morals and integrity would be lost. In fact, the way he worded it was, morality would be thrown to the wind. Their leaders also would become more and more corrupt. Now, explain to me that they believe that this is very much a cycle, and that at the end of each cycle, a time of purification occurs. I said, so do you believe also in a time of a golden age or a time when there will be great peace? And he says, oh yes. He says, that will be the beginning of that next cycle. And in that cycle, mankind will have turned back to the right teachings that are truths from the beginning of time, and that they'll begin to live them. And so they also see this view. Now, it was interesting to talk to him about the fact that they had a golden age at one time as well in their history. It was fascinating to see that the characteristics of every single one of these societies that made it were the same, very much the same. The Tibetans also told of a time when their people would be destroyed as well as the religion, and it would be reestablished in the country of the red-faced people. And one of the most important aspects of survival to them through the dark times would be the re-strengthening of family ties and trying to solidify that. So once again, that theme comes very strong. I want to share a story with you that was shared by the Guatemalan Mayans, in which they told about a time when this great white god, who they called Gucumatz, was amongst their people, and he was in a village. A little girl came running into the village and had a claw mark across her face, clothes torn, and was bleeding and crying. And the Gucumatz picked the girl up and carried her down to a stream at the edge of the village, washed her off and brought her back up, and she was completely whole. And the people fell down on the ground and began to worship him, and one of the villagers stood up and pointed back behind the great god, and he turned around, and there was the jaguar that had clawed this child, and the frashed child. And all the people began to shake and quiver and figure, oh, wow, he's going to be ripped apart by the jaguar. And instead he turned and he raised his arm to the peace sign of the Indians. and said to the jaguar, "Soft-footed chief, in thy jungle setting, come close to receive my father's blessing. Forgiven thou art for the pangs of thy hunger. Go and clothe the little children no more." That was just a wonderful story about this man's love for not only the little children, but for all God's creations, for the animals as well. Another Indian shared the story with me. This is a Cherokee man, and he said that, to my knowledge, he said, I've never heard this from any other Indian tribe, but he said that their Cherokee people tell the story of a time when this great prophet or white brother came up among their people, and he said that this man actually had 12, he called them disciples, with him, and that they followed him wherever he went. And he said that he began going out into the forest, and these 12 went with him. And as he was in the forest, he came upon a fawn that was by itself. And he turned to the fawn and said, "Where is your mother?" And the fawn turned its head, and he looked down the pathway, and there was this doe laying dead in the middle of the pathway, having been thrashed by some type of mountain lion. But anyway, he said that the great white being walked down to the mother and knelt next to it and began to softly caress its side. And as he rubbed across the animal's body, all of the wounds healed up. And suddenly the doe raised up and began to walk away. And these 12 turned to him and said, "Why are you wasting your strength on an animal that is dead?" And he said to them that there cannot be too many good deeds. Such is the manner of compassion. A lost lamb in my father's business is as important as saving a nation. One need not choose between them. More precious in my father's eyes is a good deed than the most exquisite jewel. What a great statement. Powerful story. Well, the Indian tribes have some wonderful stories about this man. And as some of the stories, I have to say, from the details around it, it would more appear that it may have been one of these 12 disciples or someone else that came amongst them, judging from the circumstances and some of the information about it. Let me now go to a different set of prophecies. And this was something that we came upon not too long ago that is really something. This was given by a woman named Ursula Sonthal. Some of you may know of her and of her prophecies. She was born in 1488 in Knaresborough, England, and was born actually in a cave on the side of a river, and thunder cracked and the smell of sulfur was smelled at the time of birth, and everybody thought, "Ooh, she's a witch, she's a witch." Well, this woman had the gift to be able to see into the future, and because of that, the time came when she was burned at the stake for heresy and supposed witchcraft. However, the stories, as far as I've been able to research her life, and it turns out they do have a museum there at that cave where she was born and lived, and they take a lot of the school classes in England to go there on visits now because of the fact that clearly most of her prophecies have come to pass and are taking place. They say that she was quite an uncomely-looking woman, had a very large nose that was warded, and so it even gave more to the fact of being a witch in that time. She didn't think she'd ever be able to marry, but eventually did marry a man named Toby Shipton, and therefore she was called Mother Shipton. She never was able to have a child. Her husband died, so she spent most of her life actually going out and serving and helping other people and taking care of other people's children. Well, with her gift of being able to see in the future, she wrote these down in poetic verse, and they are really something. Listen to this. "A carriage without horse will go. Disaster fills the world with woe. In London, Primrose Hill shall be in the center hold of Bishop's See. Around the world, men's thoughts will fly quick as the twinkling of an eye." Could be the internet. "And water shall great wonders do. How strange, and yet it shall come true. Through towering hills, proud men shall ride. No horse or ass will be by their side. Beneath the water, men shall walk, shall ride, shall sleep, shall even talk. And in the air, men shall be seen in white and black and even green." Can you imagine what she must have thought when she was watching these people walking under the water and sleeping and talking, etc.? "A great man then shall come and go, for prophecy declares it so. In water, iron shall then float as easy as a wooden boat. Gold shall be seen in stream and in stone, in land that is yet unknown." Now, this was the early 1500s, so at that time, America was barely discovered. "A house of glass shall come to pass in England, but alas, alas, a war will follow with the work where dwells the pagan and the Turk. These states will lock in fiercest strife and seek to take each other's life. When North shall thus divide the South, an eagle shall build in the lion's mouth. You think about the United States being the eagle and Great Britain being the lion. Then tax and blood and cruel war shall come to every humble door. Three times shall lovely sunny France be led to play a bloody dance before the people shall be free. Three tyrant rulers shall she see. Three rulers in succession be, each springs from different dynasty. Then when the fiercest strife is done, England and France shall be as one. For in those wondrous far-off days, the women shall adopt a craze to dress like men. Sounds like the Hopis. To dress like men and trousers wear, and to cut off the locks of their hair. They'll ride astride with brazen brow as witches do on broomsticks now. And roaring monsters with man atop do seem to eat the verdant crop. Any farmers in here? Sounds like a combine to me. And men shall fly as birds do now and give away the horse and plow. There'll be a sign for all to see. Be sure, for it certain will be. Love shall die and marriage cease, and nations wane as babes decrease. Wow. And wives shall fondle cats and dogs, and men shall much the same live as hogs. In 1926, build houses light of straw and sticks, for then shall mighty wars be planned, and fire and sword shall sweep the land. When pictures seem alive with movements free, must have been the TV, when boats like fishes swim beneath the sea, when men like birds shall soar the sky, then half the world, deep drenched in blood, shall die. For those who live the century through, which would be our time, in fear and trembling, this shall do. Flee to the mountains and the dens, to bogs and forests and wild fens. For storms will rage and oceans roar when Gabriel stands on sea and shore. And as he blows his wondrous horn, old worlds die and new be born. A fiery dragon will cross the sky six times before this earth shall die. Mankind will tremble and frightened be for the six heralds in this prophecy. For 7 days and seven nights, man will watch this awesome sight. The tides will rise beyond their ken to bite away the shores, and then the mountains will begin to roar. An earthquake split the plain to shore, and flooding waters rushing in will flood the lands with such a din that mankind cowers in muddy fen and snarls about his fellow men. He bares his teeth and fights and kills and secretes food in secret hills, and ugly in his fear he lies to kill marauders, thieves, and spies. Man flees in terror from the floods and kills and rapes and lies in blood, and spilling blood by mankind's hand will stain the bitter many lands. And when the dragon's tail is gone, man forgets and smiles and carries on to ply himself, but too late, for mankind has earned his deserved fate. His masked smile, his false grandeur will serve the gods their angry stewer, and they will send the dragon back to light the sky. His tail will crack upon the earth and rend the earth, and man shall flee, king, lord, and serf. But slowly they are routed out to seek diminishing water spout, and men will die of thirst before the ocean rides to mount the shore. And lands will crack and rend anew. You think it strange. It will come true. And in some far-off distant land, some men, such a tiny band, will leave their solid mount and span the earth, those few to count, who survives this and then begins the human race again. But not on land already there, but on ocean's bed, stark, dry, and bare. Not every soul on earth will die as the dragon's tail goes sweeping by. Not every land on earth will sink, but these will wallow in stench and stink of rotting bodies of beast and man, of vegetation crisped on the land. But the land that rises from the sea will be dry and clean and soft and free of mankind's dirt, and therefore the source of man's new dynasty. And those that live will ever fear the dragon's tail for many years, but time erases memory. You think it's strange, but it will be. Now, this is an interesting part, I think, in correlation with the time of peace. And before the race is built anew, a silver serpent comes to view and spews out men of like unknown to mingle with the earth, now grown cold from its heat, and then these men can enlighten the minds of future man, to intermingle and show them how to live and love and thus endow the children with the second sight, a natural thing so that they might grow graceful, humble, and when they do, the golden age will start anew. The dragon's tail is but a sign, for mankind's fall and man's decline. And before this prophecy is done, I shall be burned at the stake at one, my body singed, my soul set free. You think I utter blasphemy. You're wrong. These things have come to me. This prophecy will come to be. She put one other